Say What? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
And welcome to the Say What Show. It is October 5th, 2019. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Dolly Howard and Barbara White and Judy Carroll. So this is the Out of Towners Day. How are you guys doing? Anybody, Dolly?
Really, really well. Excellent.
Okay, that was Judy Carroll. And how about Barbara?
I'm tired, but I'm here. And my spirit is good. My body is sleepy.
Bless your heart. I'm here. Okay. So, Barb, is your body tired because of all the festival stuff you've been doing here?
I think that's a part of it. I've been really on the go a lot, and I never slow down. And that's not a good thing, but it's just, I just am. I'm just a goer. Anyway, we just took, I teach challenged adults on Sundays. And so we took the whole group to the wilds today, which is AEP, which is the electric organization that's here in this part of the country, strip mined thousands and thousands of acres in the area. And they reclaimed part of it. And 10,000 acres of it they sold to an organization that now is called The Wilds. And they're taking in endangered species literally from all over the world. We have rhinos and zebras and ostriches and all kinds of oryxes and wild donkeys, wild dogs, cheetahs, giraffes. So they're all in different areas called the pasture of this hilly land of southeastern Ohio. So there are all these animals, and they have these tours on buses. So we took the students today on the tour. And, oh, of course, they absolutely loved it. They love seeing the way they get so few experiences. They're pretty much trapped in town in southeastern Ohio. Just two of them married, have a car, and the rest of them have to depend on their feet or public transportation or someone else to take them. Most of them, someone else to take them. Several of them have walkers and are walking with canes. And so we
now,
have.
Who are these people today that you take?
They are challenged adults.
Okay.
A gal I met 10 or 11 years ago knew I was a teacher and came up to me and asked me if I would start teaching as a mission on Sunday. And I was very nervous about doing it because I hate to say this out loud because I don't know who listens in, but I don't consider myself really a Christian. I don't espouse to many of the things, and I think we've been lied to, and scripture has been manipulated, and anyway, I was reluctant to do it, but she had me try it out, and I found that I really, my whole teaching career, many of the kids that I taught were very reluctant learners. They were rebellious. They were teenagers. They didn't want to learn. They were just interested in sex, And so there was a lot of disinterest. And I always felt like I was pushing rocks up a hill. And these adults, it was called the Reading for Life class. And we would work and work and work and work to teach them vowel sounds and consonant sounds and how to speak in complete sentences. And, over the years, I've seen amazing changes in some of them. Some of them will never learn to read. They will never learn to read. They're 30, 40, 50, 60 years old. They will never learn to read. But they love coming to class. And they love whatever. So we broadened out. It's more like an enrichment. So we do some reading. We do some writing. We do some math. We do history. We touch on subjects, but we do a lot of enrichment. So, last week I took in craft things and we do art, and you know, we take field trips. So these people are people who were the fall through the cracks type people. Most of them are lower intelligence. Some of them are very low intelligence. Two of them were virtually nonverbal, and they were adults. And right now, one of them is speaking in complete sentences, and he smiles. And when he leaves the classroom, he gives us a hug. This is enormous progress.
Oh, yeah.
And his sister is very similar. You know, many of them are terribly obese. And some of them are pretty sharp. So it's a real broad spectrum of challenge. Physical, mental, and emotional. I know that, you know, I took some, we were trained when I was a teacher. We had some in-service where we were learning about sexual abuse and how to identify it in students. And one of the ways was when people talk baby talk. And several of these students, it's just so clear. You know, they're absolutely huge, enormous. You know, they're guarding their sexual areas with loads of excess fat, you know, which is, I think, very significant.
Right.
And the fact that they talk baby talk and they don't, you know, these two people didn't speak at all. The fact that they even trust us enough now and they'll share things about their lives with it, it's just amazing. So I feel like on Sundays, oh, gee, you know, I wish I didn't have to go. And then I go and I think, oh, these people are just so dear. They want to learn. They want to be there. What an amazing thing. So that's what I do on my Sunday afternoons and sometimes other times like today.
Wow. That's pretty special. You're a special person to be able to do that. Not everybody can.
You know, I was a special ed teacher and ended up teaching severe behavior handicapped kids. Oh, God. And I started out in art. I kept saying, how did this happen? How did I? But, you know, it's really clear that the universe had another plan. You know, when I try to do things differently, I was going to become a sign language interpreter. And I would get up at 5, I'd get my lunch packed, I'd get my stuff packed and get my books ready, and I would go to teach, and then I'd leave and drive to Columbus, which is more than an hour away during rush hour, and stay in classes till 9:30 or 10, and then come home at 11:30, and then get up again at 5. And, you know, I was studying to be something different, and it didn't work out. And I spent thousands of dollars and many, many months, you know, trying to do this, and it didn't. It's obvious to me when things don't go smoothly that it isn't part of the plan, you know?
That's what I always tell my kids. Yeah. Yeah. If you're struggling to do it, you're not meant to do it.
Yeah. When you're on the right path, things just come your way to help you move along it.
Yeah.
They do. And there, it's wonderful, you know. Only too bad we have to get to be like 76 years old before we really begin to get the message. Oh, well, it takes what it takes, you know.
So, Judy, what have you been up to?
Oh, boy, what haven't I been up to? We've had a very, very busy time with Reiki. A lot of success with it, but now I'm starting to feel a bit tired too. Been really busy with a lot of people coming to me. Been working with a friend who underwent very, very serious surgery to remove a brain tumor. 15 hours of surgery and then 36 hours in an induced coma. And another of my colleagues and I went to the hospital on Thursday to visit her, to give her Reiki, and she was basically unconscious in a coma state, and everyone really, really worried about her. Anyway, at the end of the hour, she started waking up and talking, and the next day she was up on her feet, moving around and eating. So we're just absolutely over the moon with this.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Oh,
it's wonderful. Noodle's amazing.
Is this Carol?
Oh, and the other amazing thing is there's another woman in the same ward who's been through the same thing and just isn't recovering, and they saw the improvement in our friend. Now they've invited us back to give Reiki to their family member. Oh, so I'm going over this afternoon to do that.
Uh-huh.
Just absolutely so excited about it.
Yeah, even though I get all wrapped up in my soap opera politics, I have been noticing more and more good things happening, and they're even putting them on TV.
Yeah.
Like yeah. What?
Well, there's this trial of a lady who thought she was in her house, but she was not in her house. She went in her neighbor's house and shot him because she didn't recognize him, and he died. So she went on trial. And yesterday she was sentenced, I think yesterday, day before. And the brother of the victim, who is a teenager, was on the stand, and he made this most moving speech to the lady, telling her that he wasn't going to say this in public because he didn't want to say it in front of his family, who were all mad at her and want her to die and all that stuff. But he wanted her to know that he forgives her. And that the biggest part of forgiveness is for the person who is the forgiver. And when he got done with his speech, he asked her if he could hug her, and she said yes. And then he asked the judge if he could hug her. The judge paused for a few minutes and then said yes. And so he walked off of this stand where he was sitting, and she went running into his arms, and they hugged for a long time. And, of course, everybody's crying. And you could hear him say, "I really forgive you." Anna.
Wow, from a teenager, does that give hope for the future or what?
And that's not the end.
Oh, wow.
Then the judge came down, and she had this Bible with her, and she was looking through, flipping through to make sure nothing was left in it. And she gave the Bible to the lady, and the judge hugged the lady. So the ladies were hugging each other, the judge and the lady who did the murder. But she got sentenced to 14 years. Which, if there's a crime, there needs to be a reckoning. So that was just one of the moving things they put on TV late. Yesterday they had it on TV. So I've been noticing more and more of that happening around the world. I really think good things are happening if I can just be more patient.
Oh, yes. It does seem like things, justice is moving very slowly.
Yeah,
but we need to focus on these things because we create our own reality. So by focusing on the beautiful, good things that are happening, we're all taking part in helping the shift to happen on planet Earth.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it is happening.
I think so, too. I was telling you all in an email that I was reading a book by Walter Cruttenden. And I'd heard his name before. I don't know where I heard it. It seems like it was years ago. But anyway, it was a very uplifting book. And he pointed out most of the things, the major things, I already know. But he put a lot of details in that really were very uplifting. You know, we are heading out of the darkness. And I believe that. Yes. You know, all the ancient scriptures talk about the golden age and the cycles. You know, everything comes in cycles. You know, day and night, you know, spring, summer, fall, you know. We go around the spiral around the central sun or the middle of the galaxy or whatever. And that's moving. You know, we're moving in all these multiple directions.
Yep.
And, you know, so as we... Everything has to change, and maybe we have been ruled by, you know, the Dracos for millions. It doesn't make any difference. What's happening is we are coming out.
Yeah.
And I'm sure of it. And, you know, I just think about, I think about the people that I'm meeting and the goodness that I'm seeing. I didn't see this 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It's not that there isn't a lot of bad stuff going on, and I'm sure that a lot of it is being exposed because it has to be exposed in order to be gotten rid of. But, you know, I'm running into people that are so good that there is no gossip. When anyone is missing in the group, there is never, ever a shred of gossip. I belong to several groups like that. It's amazing to me because I belong to, I have been involved in very snide. If somebody was missing, they were ripe meat, you know? And I don't go to those things, but I'm just so impressed with the people that I know and the things that I see. I am very encouraged.
Yeah, I agree. There's definite changes happening. Just in our local paper yesterday morning, an article was featured about meditation going mainstream in schools now. Now, this is something that 20 years ago, there was no way. No way.
Judy, it's all, go it's ahead. Go. No.
Yeah, it's almost becoming a compulsory subject in some of the schools here.
Well, this is the bane of my existence while I was teaching. For, you know, the 20, almost 28 years, I was considered a witch because I meditated.
Yes, yes.
And I was told I was never to use that word in the classroom.
Oh.
We taught mini courses. Yeah. And I had where I did a guided meditation. Now, this same two psychologists that taught us about sexual abuse in children also taught us about guided meditation. So I was taught in that school how to do that. Yeah. And I did it with the kids, and one girl came up afterwards and she's crying. She said, "Oh, Mrs. White, that was the most wonderful moment of my life. I loved it. I loved it." But I got into trouble because I was teaching witchcraft.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Would you actually Appalachia?
Yeah. Would you like me to read out a little bit of this article? Because it is just so amazing, the number of schools. The headline is Meditation Goes Mainstream, and it goes on to say, the Oxford Dictionary describes mindfulness as a mental state achieved by focusing one's awareness on the present moment while calmly acknowledging and accepting one's feelings, thoughts, and bodily sensations, used as a therapeutic technique. Just like weightlifting strengthens muscles, mindfulness strengthens areas of the brain that control executive function, such as the prefrontal cortex, hippocampus, and amygdala, which in turn enable us to regulate emotions, focus, plan, remember instructions, and multitask. American professor and author of Wherever You Go, There You Are, Jon Kabat-Zinn, helped pioneer the modern-day mindfulness movement, integrating the traditional Buddhist practice with neuroscience findings to create the Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, which MBSR program, in the 1970s, now offered in medical centers, hospitals, and health organizations worldwide. Now mindfulness has gone mainstream. It's offered in workplaces, including Google, IBM, NAB, Apple, LinkedIn, Deutsche Bank, and universities to help employees reduce stress and improve performance. Adapting it for schools was, for many, a no-brainer. The Smiling Mind mindfulness curriculum for primary school children in years 1 to 6 includes 20 lesson plans mapped to the Australian curriculum's personal and social capabilities. Among the fortnightly topics are awareness, managing emotions, self-compassion, gratitude, making decisions, acts of kindness, positive relationships, resilience, empathy, and more. Now, a school principal by the name of Eunice Webb says, it's not just about individual well-being, but social well-being, and that's what I like about the Smiling Mind program in particular. It also brings in all the social and emotional lessons around empathy and gratitude, and setting goals, the points we know about the brain and positive education and positive psychology. And then further down in the article, a lady by the name of Kristen Douglas says, the suicide rate is clearly too high and the prevalence of mental health risks and concerns is higher than it's ever been. We're trying to reduce all of these issues with early intervention and by giving people the skills early in life, so not only can they live a good, healthy life with good strategies, but also recognise the warning signs when things are starting to go a bit south. Almost 1,000 schools and 8,000 teachers in Queensland have signed up to the BU program since its launch in November 2018. For, as this lady said, mindfulness is not some new age trend in schools taking precious time away from literacy and numeracy, but a potentially life-saving tool. Isn't that wonderful?
Wow. Wonderful.
I never thought I'd hear that something like that again.
Yes, yes. I'm so excited about it.
What were the numbers again? How many schools? How many?
Sorry?
How many schools did you say?
1,000 schools and 8,000 teachers in Queensland have signed up for this program.
Holy.
That's stunning. You know, I think there's something happening. Well, that's just an indication. Okay, you can never get to that point where you got that those many numbers unless there's a fundamental change to the collective consciousness of Australia.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
And I've been watching this for a while because of all the countries in the world, it's Australia that has been locked into Shungite and the Shungite bees from the get-go. We're very popular over there. And we've got, you know, I mean, Derek keeps in contact with some very actively engaged in spreading the Shungite, you know, information to Australia. But what's recently happened, and maybe you have heard about it, but you have your largest telecommunications company, I think is TPS or something like that. I might be remembering it wrong, but it's the biggest telecommunications in Australia has said that they will not continue to deploy the 5G.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Now, when the CEO, he was the operating officer, they called him the operating officer of this company, was announcing this, one of the jackass reporters is like, you know, where's all this information coming from, this irrationality and you know, going on like that. And the man, whose name I forget, I apologize, but he said, I don't think that their concerns are irrational. And what they said when they did this was that they were shutting down all further deployment of 5G over health concerns by the public.
Wow.
That was critical. That was very, very critical. If I'm going to talk like a conspiracy person, what I would say is, yes, because you guys have a guy by the name of Ray Broomhall. I mean, what a perfect name. Ray, light, broom, clean the hall. I mean, gosh. And he has been, for the last, not very long, he's a barrister, a lawyer, and he has been taking personal cases of people who are saying that cell tower is killing me. And instead of going, he tried to go through your courts, and what the response by the telecommunications companies were, well, listen, we'll do this. We'll go on moratorium here, but your client's going to be responsible for the millions of dollars that we lose because we're not building. Okay. So, and that's how they shut them down. So, Mr. Broomfeld Hall, realized that, well, he went back. He realized that his client, he didn't know anything about this, but he realized his client was serious. And so what he did was he looked at another alternative to make this stop, and it was criminal charges. So they began to bring criminal charges of assault against the telecommunications companies. And he's got a procedure out there now that the basic thing is, you as an individual have to prove your case. So get a doctor to swear that this stuff does do damage. Okay, yeah. And you sign an official document saying that this, my patient, you know, is severely affected by this stuff, and then the courts don't even have a decision. You know, once you get those legal papers in order, the courts didn't have a decision. So I think that they realized they were up against the wave of awareness as to the problems. And so for that reason, knowing that he saw you shut down over 1,000 cell towers.
Wow. Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the fact of the matter is that when you've got that much of an outcry in any place, it's screaming in the subconscious. You
yeah.
know? And yeah. So when Dr. Oz, just this last week, well, yeah, about last week sometime, he put out a show where he was in a mock town hall, and the supposition was that they were going to bring 5G into your town. Do you want it or not? So he goes on TV. He's very, very popular, has a huge audience, and the people in that audience, the physical people there, voted for 5G. Yeah, let's bring it in. I don't remember what the, you know, numbers were, but it was heavily for. And then he said, look, we're going to take this and we're going to put it on Facebook for the next 24 hours. You people out there in the audience, the listening audience, the TV, listeners, you go and you make your decision. What do you think? And it was only 38% that said bring it in. It was a 2-1, almost 2-1. No, we don't want this. 2-1. Yeah. That was huge. They don't tell you how many people actually participated, but to have that percentage, wow, I was stunned.
Yeah.
So it's already in the collective consciousness, and I'm just using the 5G as an example because I agree with all of you on a human level. Things are starting to change. Things are being... My neighbor, we had a tree situation, and I had my tree people in there cutting back my tree so his house wouldn't get hurt. But, and he's a pastor, Christian pastor. And, you know, just standing there watching and talking, you know, pretty soon we got into very deep conversations about 5G in society. You know, I mean, it's like if you go and spend any amount of time with anybody, there is a more of a preponderance to be talking about stuff that they used to just look at you like you're a little crazy. And now they're bringing up the subjects. So there is a massive change.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm finding that also. And I say to people, where did you hear that? How do you know that? I can't believe you're saying that. So I agree.
I told you you'd do it, Nancy.
Say again?
I told you you'd do it.
She said she wasn't worried about 5G because I would shut it down. And the fact of the matter is that I've known about this situation for a very long time. I was taken by surprise when I realized by 2018 that these mamas had been building it and not telling anybody, that there was already areas that the antennas were already in. They weren't live, but they were already in, especially in the, like, out west when Derek was doing his, you know, 5,000-mile trips. He does these circle things. And I said to him, pay attention to the antennas. And sure enough, he comes back. He says, this is what I'm seeing. What does this look like to you? And I said, that's 5G antennas. You know, because of the way that he was they were short, they were not tall, they were coming up, you know, every 800 feet or something, too many of them, you know, what are these things? And they were all in place already. Because in the open areas like that along a major road, they can do whatever they want. Nobody's paying attention. And so when you finally pay attention, you look around and you realize, dang, those people have already put all this in there. So, but the key here is that when I started this mission of, I tried to get out of it. I swear I tried to get out of it. I don't have the time. I'm trying to get Shungite out there. You know, the 4G is a problem enough, but you know, you guys have got to take it on. You got to stop it. But, unfortunately, at the beginning, there wasn't very many people that understood it. And I did because of my background in electronic warfare. So I got with Michael Dunn, who was really gung-ho to go, to put up a radio show. So we put up this radio show about 5G. And within 6 weeks, I saw a change that I didn't think I would see in 6 months. You know, all of a sudden, there were all sorts of websites popping up with some very, very excellent people behind them because of the way they were dealing with the information and how much information was out there. And right now, we just did a show with Mark Steele, and he is in England and got his hand right on the, you know, he's a weapons expert. And this is going to be interesting, I think, to us guys, right? Because Mark is, that was what he did. He designed, he created weapons systems, but the electronics involving the weapon system, all electromagnetic. So he gets a town right next to him, Gateshead, in England, gets blessed to be this new super smart city, and they put in all of this 5G, not only the coming off of like what would power your televisions and your smart refrigerators and all this other stuff, your electronics, but the fact of the matter was is that they had added the LED lights, and these things are a weapon system without any doubt. And but they put it right next to the only man probably on the face of the earth that would have understood what this meant and had the courage to go after them. And he sees this thing happening, the town right next to him, he sees these antennas going up, and he's going like, what are, and he really started studying, then he takes some, you know, pictures, and he starts doing, you know, scientific stuff on them, and he goes, oh my God, this is a weapon system. This is designed by weapons companies. He knew the technology. He was involved in the technology. So he goes to his local council, Gateshead Council, and says to him, you guys don't know what they're doing here. You know, the telecommunication, you just did this, and this is, oh my God, you know, you're going to kill people. And they brought him up on charges of being a terrorist. So he went through a number of court cases, and two judges had the courage to come out and say that to the people that were trying to get him in jail, you have to pay attention to this man. He is an authority on this subject. Okay? But if what we're talking about here, and Mark realizes it now, is that this was a divine situation. They put their first city out right next to the one guy that's going to stop you. What are the chances of this? You know, so every time I turn around with the 5G situation, it's like, yes, it's absolutely stupid and horrible, but at the same time, you can feel a divine hand behind it.
Oh, yeah. Look, absolutely. I always remember one of our upstairs teachers saying, you know, there are no accidents. Everything has a purpose behind it. You know, so, yeah, there's definitely a divine hand behind everything that happens in the whole universe.
The very fact they brought out the 5G, I said, as soon as I realized what was really happening, I said, no, this is a godsend. Because it's going to wake people up to the fact that we're killing the planet with 4G. Just a little slower. Yeah. You know, and now people, I mean, because the vast majority of information that you hear being cited as, you know, being proving that the electromagnetic and Wi-Fi is dangerous and harmful is all based on 4G, not 5G.
Yeah.
You know, so the fight that we needed to fight is being fought over another question, 5G. And without a doubt, 5G is just a weapon system. I'm not going to talk about that anymore now. But when your people, okay, I was wondering about this. When your people are watching all of this happen, you can't interfere in the manipulation of you know, human society, right?
Yeah.
But could you tell us, or are these people insane? Because the people that are leading us right now don't seem to be all there. And I say that with compassion. It's like something is terribly wrong from a standpoint of what is rational and logical. There's just like, you know, a huge number of characters who are supposedly our leaders that are like, they don't even make sense in what they're doing anymore. So from the standpoint of the Zeta, you know, is there a breakdown? Because I'm telling people, well, they probably got 5G in the Congress. All the Congress, their brains are probably fried. You know, but do you guys ever look at this or talk about this? Somebody up there might know, but you might not know.
Well, you know, all I can say is my understanding is that everything has a purpose behind it, and it's all about choosing love over fear. So, I mean, the world leaders, you know, they have to make these choices as well. And no one off the planet can do it. It's only the people here. So perhaps these really awful things that are happening, like 5G, have to be brought out into the open so that people know what's going on, and can make choices from there. And, you know, it's the world leaders who have to make these choices, and they make the right choice or they make the wrong choice. I know it's really hard to put into words, but that's about as well as I can explain it.
Well, no, that works. I mean, because it's really, when you're watching it, there's so much irrationality on the side of the others, that when this telecommunications company came out and actually said they were stopping for health concerns, that's sane. Yeah. That's sane, you know, so you hope at least in Australia you people are not, you're getting sanity back at the higher echelons, let me put it, the people that can make a difference because of their positions. Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit like the climate change issue. I mean, you know, the ones in charge who are denying it. I mean, it's just absolutely irrational. I mean, scientists all over the world are coming out and saying, yes, there is climate change happening and it's man-made. But, you know, this irrational sort of crazy madness, no, 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 it's not happening. You know, that's another example of it.
Oh, we probably don't want to go there because we just did a show. We just,
we can't go there.
Yeah, we've done a couple of shows on why that's not true. The climate change being.
And I saw a show on TV about it too, just in the past week, proving that it's not the people who are doing it, it's the universes. Going through these changes, which is affecting the Earth, but that's what the program said.
Yeah, it's basically another way of control, because the
fear.
What they say is that, oh my gosh, if we don't come together, if we don't drop our national identities and come together as the, you know, humanity. Then we're going to have this terrible climate change thing, but we can do something by having a carbon tax, which doesn't limit how much carbon you're putting in it. It's like insane. I mean, if you look at this closely, there's one insanity after the other, but it's only designed to break down our bonds of nationality. Now, I agree that the most wonderful thing would be if humanity came together, but not over something that's not true. And the truth of it is that NASA, years ago, said the planet is going to heat up because our orbit around the sun is not circular. It has an elliptic to it. So sometimes we're closer to the sun. And they said, we're going to go into an era time where we're closer to the sun, so therefore it's going to be hotter. You know, but they chose to disregard those kind of facts. And the only thing they looked at, and if you really look at what they claim is the scientific basis for the fact that human beings are causing this, we're not disputing that it's happening or not happening. It's happening, but it's not because of human beings. But when they looked, like the UN and everybody else, looked at that specific what's causing it. The only thing they looked at was human activity.
And cows.
And cows. And cows. And this one guy, Dr. Tim Ball, he says, if you got rid of all the cows, if you killed all the cows because you were afraid of the carbon content in their farts, he said, the world would collapse. And he goes into this scientific thing about when cows defecate and what happens to their poop is building the soil. But more importantly, it's actually creating a situation of the carbon. See, if we don't have the carbon dioxide, that's what goes back into the soil and actually is the foundation for the earth. Earth, wind, and water. That is carbon. That comes from carbon dioxide. Fascinating science. But the poor guy keeps getting sued. he said, I have spent over $60,000 in legal fees because of this one lawyer working for the International Carbon or what climate or whatever it is thing over there in Europe someplace that is the head of all this carbon taxing thing. Because nobody wants to listen to it, but now scientists all over the world are actually listening to it. Because they started to check the information coming out from the authorities. So there's also, yes, the climate is changing, but it's sick. It's just like you guys were talking about. It's cycles. It's a cycle thing. We've gone through this many times before.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I agree with that. But at the same time, the human pollution isn't helping.
Absolutely not.
In the ocean.
Absolutely.
But see, that's another problem with it because they got us focused on the carbon. Okay, the carbon's really not a problem because that's what comes back in. It's not making the planet heat up. But because they got us focused on that, people stop focusing on 5G. They stop focusing on the terrible pollution in the oceans. You know, the killing of the oceans. Because they got us all wrapped around a bogus problem. It's not a problem. We got terrible problems. But for heaven's sakes, let's look at the terrible problems, not the ones you're making up. And that, you know, that's why I say it seems like the people that are leading us are all gone crazy.
For instance, look what Biden did with his son. That's okay. That's what they don't pay any attention to that. That's okay. Leave Biden alone. Trump makes a phone call and he doesn't even do this threat. You do this or I won't do that. He doesn't do that, and they're blaming him for doing what Biden did, and Trump didn't even do it. So, really, there is something wrong with these people's brains. They short-circuited somehow.
They're Wi-Fi'd. Wi-Fi'd.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Well, we'll leave that stuff there. So, Miss Barbara, you've been gone for, was it 3 weeks? Two months, right?
Was it 3 months? Well, at least a month and a half, yeah.
So, and you went out on your fairs, right?
I went, I did some shows. I'm doing another show next weekend. And then I did some camping with friends. And then I took my mother-in-law's suite on wheels to North Carolina to see my son and daughter-in-law and grandson. So that was an adventure. My grandson doesn't like his grandmother very well. I'm not a very popular person. And, you know, if you don't see a lot of them. And we see each other almost every week. We Skype.
How old is he?
He's two. And the terrible twos are not a myth. He looks like an angel. I mean, he's really a beautiful child. I'm not a kid person, but he's a gorgeous, he's got a beautiful head and a beautiful face and beautiful long eyelashes, and he's got this cherub. He's just beautiful. And he's not, because every mother crow thinks their little crow's the blackest, you know. Anyway, he's very busy, and he told Dwemma, be quiet.
Oh.
And I was okay when I was helping him build a garage, and he calls it a dwodge. And so I thought it was cute, and I said, oh, okay, I'll help you build a dwodge. He's, not a dwodge, a dwodge. So, okay. So this grandmothering is, it's a new adventure, and they wanted me to watch him. And I said, you know, I'm not going to do it if it terrorizes either one of us.
I understand that completely. Yeah.
So, you know, I got kicked twice the first night I got there, and they're saying, don't you kick your grandmother. And
oh,
so he kicks me again, you know. And,
oh.
Oh, he's just, you know, and so he did something. He did a bunch of things, and they kept telling him to apologize to his grandmother. And, of course, he wouldn't. And finally, when he did, you know, his head's down, and he's obviously insincere. Sorry, Grandma. Anyway. you know, because he had to do it, he was told. But anyway, he's just as cute as he could be. And I never thought I would even be able to say that about any child, you know.
Well, do you feel in him energetically? Do you feel something different than from other children? Not just because he's your, I mean, because of the age. I mean, I haven't been with a young person. I mean, they kind of scare me, actually.
Me too. Me too. Absolutely me too. I keep trying to figure out who he is, you know, and I think I mentioned a while back that I was totally disinterested in being a grandmother, and at the time, my son was totally disinterested in being a father. Yeah. And at one point, I had this really close feeling connection about this spirit that was going to be born. And so I was dowsing, and I thought, who could this be? I'm dowsing through a bunch of people, and I thought, is it Bahu, which my mother-in-law? And I ended up being very close with her. And I got a no, and well, was it Da? Da is the grandfather. Was it, you know, Pop? And no. Was it Mike, who was my former husband? And I got a yes, and I was again, is it Mike? Yes. Is it Mike? Yes. I said, oh, my gosh. So I immediately called my son, and I said, Ryan, you know, I've been dowsing to find out who this baby is, and it's your dad. Do you think it's possible? He said, oh, Mom, I've been thinking that all along. So when he was born and we were finally able to go in, I walked in, and Ryan, this big man who's not going to be in with the birthing room, all this stuff, he was in there the whole time. And, you know, one of the mom of the grandmother on the other side is saying, I hear Ryan, he's helping Becky, which this is not, you know, Ryan's a typical, well, he'd probably tell you he was a redneck. And he is. And he wasn't going to do this. But he was. He was in with Becky, and he helped deliver the baby. And so when I'm walking in, he's got this little creature, and he's washing blood off its face and its head. And, you know, babies, when they first are born, they have this lovely green poop that comes out, and he's wiping off the poop, and he's saying, it's okay, little man, it's okay. And he's crying. My son, maybe I've seen him cry twice. And he's crying, and I look at the baby, and I said, oh, my God, Ryan, he looks just like your dad. He said, I know, Mom. Isn't he beautiful? Now, what a shit. Well, that child is absolutely the love of his life. He's just crazy mad about that baby. And I just think, when you talk about there's a purpose for everything, and behind everything is goodness, I just think about the miracle that the nurse was in there. She was from England, and she made Ryan stay in there the whole time. And I'm just sure, cutting the cord, doing all the things that he did in that birthing room, I just think that this is what has made a big difference. I'm just stunned. I can't believe that this is my son. So,
well, this is your son, but this is also your ex-husband come back in a baby form, and you're wondering why he wants to kick you?
Yeah, I was wondering, did you not get
How was your marriage? Yes, how was your marriage?
It was not good. Now, that's what I thought when he kicked me, and I thought, you know, his whole attitude is Mike getting back at me. I mean, I was, this is before recovery, you know, that we split up after I got into recovery, but, you know, when I was not in recovery, I was totally in my disease, and I was not a nice person. And, you know, for many reasons, I don't blame him. I don't blame him for doing what he did. But, you know, I just think of little Mike. Of course, that was his name, Mike, you know. So little Mike is playing out some of the, you know, some of the things he probably would have enjoyed doing to me.
See, the truth finally came out. The truth finally came out.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, and there's a reason that baby was born, even though, quote, he wasn't supposed to be. You know, Ryan was not going to be a father. Anyway, and I wasn't going to be a grandmother, but I guess I am. So there you are.
So, Barb, do you mind sharing what your recovery was for?
I have multiple addictions. And I have I'm not supposed to talk about this. You know, I'm not supposed to. They don't want you in public places with public names, you know, to be discussing. But
well, don't do anything that's not comfortable.
Yeah, really.
You know, they say anonymity, and I'm already given probably too much away, but I feel like I'm talking to friends here, and I would talk to friends about this. I would have no problem discussing it with friends, but since we're on the air, it's probably not wise that I even said what I said. But recovery is a really important part of my life, and it's changed my life and every single relationship in my life. I've gone from hating my in-laws to loving them very much. And, you know, my father-in-law wept the last time I saw him. We knew that it would be the last time I would see him. And I definitely never saw him, you know, weeping. My husband and I ended up very amicably. I would go down and visit the children who were living with their grandparents, who was living with their dad. The dad was living with the grandparents. He was living with his parents, and my kids were living with them in a three-room house. And I would go down and visit, and they would absolutely insist I stay there. And everybody gave up their bed, you know. And, I mean, I guess today there are very similar situations that happen with people that and we didn't get a divorce. We had a dissolution. It was an amicable parting. Anyway, post that, and I had two sons I was very estranged from, very estranged. My youngest son, virtually no contact for 20 years. He wouldn't answer my letters. He wouldn't answer my phone calls. He wouldn't answer my emails. Once in a great while, he'd call and complain and tell me he had no food, no money, and I'd send him a big box of food, like maybe a 3x3 box of food. And he had already moved, and it would come back. And the food, the box to send it cost more than the food it did. Mm. And so I'd have to send it again. Anyway, I never thought I would have a good relationship with either one of these boys. And I have a really good relationship with the youngest one and a very good one with my oldest one. So, and I put the total reason on the change that happens to people when they become introspective and they're willing to look at their own character defects. They work towards integrity. You know, you make amends when you make a mistake. And you have to, you know, when you're going through this stuff, a person who works on their recovery has to inventory themselves, and it's a very fact-finding process, and it's very revelatory. And we get to find out what's really running us. And it's not what I ever thought, ever. I was totally unable to see these things. It's like, it's a spiritual process because, you know, whoever, whatever God is, absolutely guides a person to see what they're doing in life that is not kind, patient, tolerant, and loving. And you become a person can become very astute at seeing these things in themselves. And I can't avoid doing things that aren't good because they come down the pike so fast and I do them so quickly that I can't sidestep them. I always thought that that was what I would be able to do. But the fact of the matter is, I continue to be a perfectly imperfect human and I continue to make mistakes, and it really keeps me humble because I have to apologize and make right for the ones that I screw up on. But it makes for very good relationships, and it makes for a beautiful life, and I am extraordinarily grateful. I have the most remarkable people in my life. Funny thing is, most of them don't live near me. Most of them are long distance, but that's okay. I mean, they are my lifeline. It's really great grace. I mean, I was never one to stick with anything. And I don't know how I happen to stick with this. And I would say 99% of the people that start on this process never finish it. I mean that, 99. I mean, there have been hundreds of people I've had contact with that have come and gone from, and there are just a very tiny handful of us. It's pretty remarkable that I'm able to be one of the people that stuck it out and continue to grow and learn from this process. It's very beautiful, and I'm amazed at people in the normal world. I remember my spiritual mentor saying, honey, we're not normal. And it was such a relief. It's like, oh, my God, we're not normal. And she said it with so much love, you know. No, I'm not normal. I am a person with addiction.
We aren't normal either, Barb.
No, I know that's true. I think addictions are demonic manifestation, actually. And that there's no way for a real addict to really become really clean without spiritual intervention. That's my humble opinion. I mean that because I don't force anybody into that corner. But
well, it may be also that the people that left the particular group that you were with went off on their own in some other way. But you know. It's not like 99% of the people, I think, that try to clean themselves up fail. It just might be that they're not going the path that you did.
It may exactly. Be,
you know, that timeline.
Yeah, you know, that they go and they find out that, you know, something simple. I mean, some people, it almost does, you can make a correlation to demonic that, you know, because some people suddenly wake up. Something happens that suddenly wakes them up and changes them right then and there, boom, you know, and it's almost like, because I've watched, you know, you hear about him, you see him, you know, but it's almost like whatever force was controlling that person, something changed, and it's probably what we're talking about, a spiritual intervention that very likely, in some of these cases, comes from their own soul. Enough of this. Boom.
Yep. I think you're right. I'm just amazed at the people, and I see more and more of them. Not with my addiction and not in the path that I've chosen, but I do see more people that are making life changes. It's pretty exciting.
All you have to do is give permission to yourself and your higher self to work together. Just imagine it, you know, and suddenly all answers are coming through. You're seeing clearer. It's not as, well, it could be this way, it could be that way. Oh no, things begin to take an obvious path, you know. Oh no, it's that one. Look at that. That's lit up. I'm going to follow the light, you know. There's changes happening to people all. I mean, being on the radio and interacting with people with the Facebook groups and stuff, it really becomes apparent that there is a tremendous number of people who are kind of brand new to this whole thing. Now, Shungite will bring them into the Shungite group, and then within that, we talk about, you know, basically we hold it to 5G, but you get introduced to other concepts of, wait a minute, it's not just this, it could, what's this Shungite? And so they start to look around, you know. And the other way, you got people who are coming in because it's conspiracy through Cosmic Reality Group, and then they start to get, what's this thing about the Shungite? And Shungite is a tool to for focus. You know, we've got people that are focused on making change, and Shungite makes changes. And as they begin to see the changes that Shungite can make, and they begin to believe, and they're listening to the people that are saying, imagine it's real. It is real, but just imagine it and let it come into your life. You know, so there is, just watching the Shungite, you know, how people are gravitating towards the concept of putting Shungite nuggets everywhere they can. You know, in the Shungite world grid, that's got, I don't know, probably, it was way over 100,000 entries. And that was probably a month ago, the last time I looked. So there is change all over the place, and we're just very fortunate for it. We're going to take a break here. It's Stephen Curtis Chapman, Meant to Be, and it's 4 minutes long. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Say What Show. It's October 5th, 2019. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Dolly Howard, Judy Carroll, and Barbara White. Okay, so who wants to go next? Is there a Zeta message? Does Barbara have more to share with us? You've got some great stories. You're very uplifting in your stories.
Wait a minute, Barb, did you see what I typed?
What did you do?
No, I was looking for it on my computer. I haven't tracked down the chat room yet.
You mean the Skype chat room?
There we go. Okay, I found it. Yeah. No, I haven't looked at it yet.
Okay.
Well, thank you for that positive. Thank you.
You're welcome.
No, tell Judy, have Judy talk about what's going on with the Zetas.
I've been doing more downstairs work lately rather than upstairs work. I know I'm up there. It was very busy on the ship the other night, but I can't remember exactly what we were getting up to. But there were heaps of humans from down here up there, all looking very confused. I was a bit worried the next day because that was a similar thing that happened before 9/11. We knew about it about 3 weeks before it happened. So we're sort of half expecting something big to happen down here, but hoping it doesn't. But there were a whole lot of humans up on the ship looking very confused, and we were trying to organize them and sort them out and reassure them. So I don't quite know what that was about. But I'll tell you what I've been really enjoying. I know you've been reading it too, Barbie, the Anna book, the Anna Grandmother of Jesus book. Oh, boy, I'm enjoying that. I'm reading the second one now and getting a massive amount out of it. All these people are being brought into the story that I learned about in my convent school days, and it's so interesting, so different from what's generally taught. I'm loving it.
What's the name of the book and the author, please?
It's the Anna, Grandmother of Jesus, and the author is Claire Hartsong.
You know, Linda is reading the sequel to it also. I haven't bought it yet, but I will read it.
Yeah, it's very interesting. The sequel is interesting because they deal with a lot more of the people who were in that Essene community back then, the Mount Carmel community, and they also go into when they arrived at Sainte Marie de la Mar, that's known now as Sainte Marie's de la Mar, when they escaped from the Middle East and came to settle on the border of France and Spain. And of course, there's a huge gypsy celebration each year dedicated to this, to Saint Sarah. And Sarah was one of the people in the group on the ship that came ashore with the three Marys, Mary the mother of Jesus and Mary Magdalene and another Mary. And Saint Sarah is looked upon as the patroness saint of the gypsies. So I'm finding it very interesting reading all this and how they set up a similar Essene community in that place in France, and then they travelled over to England on the side of Avalon. And I never realised, but I actually visited that place when I was over there in 1995. I visited the Isle of Anglesey, and it never occurred to me that that was actually part of Avalon.
Now, maybe we should just give a recap of what this book is about for the people who might not know it.
Okay. Basically, what the story is told by, who's known as Saint Anne, but Anne, who was the grandmother of Jesus. And it's basically talking about the very, very intensive training that all of them went through, herself, Jesus himself went through a massive, massive amount of initiations at their community in Mount Carmel in the Middle East. They also travelled to Egypt and went through a massive amount of initiations. And one of these initiations that they carried out a number of times is known as the Rite of the Sepulchre. And basically what it is it's a how can I say it, like a death experience where they actually leave the body and come back into the body, but the body appears to be totally dead. And it's a rite that they practice. And this is what Jesus carried out in his so-called death on the cross and resurrection. He had been practicing this rite for many, many years all through his life. So it was after the resurrection that he actually sort of came back and continued his work down here. But he was actually vibrating at a higher frequency, so he wasn't completely in physical form. But it's very, very interesting. One of the big points that's brought up is the fact that the patriarchal idea was brought into the church many, hundreds of years after Jesus' crucifixion, in that there weren't just 12 apostles, there were 24. Each apostle had a female counterpart, as did Jesus. So, the whole female thing's been put down so much by the patriarchal church. And this book goes into great details about all of this. I found that so interesting.
Now, where did the author get the information?
Yes, it's a woman by the name of Claire Hartsong who has also gone through a lot of initiations. And she found herself in a situation with this being Anna, the mother of Jesus, wanting to speak through her to bring through all this lost information. And it parallels so well the different things that have been brought through with the Dead Sea Scrolls and Hagnagadi, I think it is, some of those lost teachings. And they're finding amazing parallels between what she's saying in this book and what's being found in these scrolls.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Can you share anything else? I mean, well, Barbara doesn't seem to be quite as enthralled. Are you, Bob?
Well, I really enjoyed it, and I want to reread it. I forget what I was going to say. I'm so sorry. I really did enjoy the book. I don't think I'm as excited about it as my sister Linda, and you all know her, and Judy are. A lot of the things that were in the book, I really felt like I had already known from other readings. Lawrence Gardner, very similar kinds of information that he wrote about. And there was one called I don't remember. The title of the book was I Remember Something, another name for Jesus. It was another name for Jesus. It wasn't Jesus, but
Yahweh?
I hope not. I think he's a bad guy, but anyway, we aren't going there either. There are a lot of books that I have always followed what I felt like. I've always been on the track of the real Jesus. Who was the real Jesus? So I've read a lot in my life about this, and most of it's been alternative. I have trouble with the scripture, and a part of it is, I'm sure, because I just have trouble with scripture, so I don't go there. And I know a lot of people say if you just read it and, ask to be shown, you will be shown. I mean, I've got good friends that really, they're very adamant about it. And I believe their experiences. But since I was a child, I have not been able to go there. Since I was a little kid, I don't know why. So much of what she presented, I was also very familiar with. Some of the details I wasn't familiar with. So it's not like it was brand new information. But it was validation of what I've read in the past. So I'm pretty convinced that what she presents here is probably pretty much, in my estimation, the truth. The initiations were interesting. They don't go into it in great detail. But I've read other things that did go into it with great detail, with people that have memories and wrote about the memories. I'm going to Egypt in January. Did I tell you guys that?
No.
Well, the Roswell group. this group of people, we more and more keep connecting, you know, that had a connection to Roswell. And I'm not going there tonight, but there's a new gal that's come in, and she just bought land in Egypt, and she and another Egyptian woman are putting together a trip. And since I was a little child, I was fascinated with Egypt. And I've always wanted to go. And when my sisters and I went to Scotland last year, and, you know, they said, "Do you want to go?" I said, "Yeah, but, you know, I'd really like to go to Egypt." Anyway, we did go to Scotland. But anyway, so this gal's talking about this Celtic-Egyptian connection, which Michael Tessarian talks about this, if you know Michael Tessarian. Very interesting fellow, to say the least. Anyway, it sounded interesting, and I asked this woman about it, and she said, "Oh, well, let me see send the brochures to you," which she did, and I read them over, and I found them interesting. And it was very strange, because I did not want to go. And she said, "Oh, Barbie, I just think you'd be just fabulous on this trip. This is just made for you." Well, it's really, really, really cheap. 17 days is like $3,100. And it covers all the tips and all the food and all the transportation and all the entrances to all the temples we're going to. And I mean, I couldn't believe the cost.
Are you sure they're legit?
Yes. Well, I hope so. I have my flight, and, you know, I've paid them half the... I hope you're right, Dolly. I know. I couldn't believe it. And they were saying, you know, this is a trip of a lifetime, because a trip like this would usually cost $6,000 or $7,000.
Wow.
So, anyway...
You're going with people that are friends, not somebody that needs to make money off of the trip.
Well, I think this is probably true. And I trust Peggy. I don't know her well. She just seems like a really... She's just one of this group, you know, and it's interesting how we've all come together. But anyway, I'm really dragging my feet. I really don't want to go. And every big spiritual, huge breakthrough that I've ever made, I've kicked and screamed and didn't want to go. And I did it, and I didn't know why I was doing it. And it was huge. So I'm doing this as a discipline. I've lived long enough that I know when I don't want... It's something I've wanted to do all my life. How could I not want to do this? And I really don't want to go. I sent off my money anyway, and, you know, I'm getting my visa. I have my passport, you know.
Well, are you feeling trepidation or fear, or are you just thinking, well, this could be a waste of my time?
I think it's more a waste of time. I'm totally disinterested. And part of it, I don't think there's much of any fear. But I think I'm going because, well, obviously somebody else has a plan. Unless I die between then and now, I will be on that plane and I will land in Cairo and we will do all the things that we're supposed to do. Anyway, so we're going to go to the Sphinx and we're going to be toning alone early in the morning inside the King's Chamber. And, you know, we're going to go to temples and ride on the Nile and, you know. So I'll have something to share with you at the end of January.
Maybe you ought to give that name to our friend Judy and have the Zetas do a check on her. Can you do that, Judy?
I'll have a private connection with Judy in the very...
Yeah, I'm getting something through, but I can't share it.
Oh, all right.
I'll talk to you, Barbie. I'll email you.
Okay,
Let me say something that I've recently, in the last, oh, I'd say... 10 days, maybe 2 weeks that I've noticed this happening. Before, whenever I had a question, I would virtually ask it and one of my guides could answer it, you know.
Ah.
And lately I go, you know, I got a question and I ask the question and they go, I don't know. What do you think? You know, and I'm getting the feeling that, I mean, the first time it happened, it kind of like startled me, and I don't even remember what it was that, you know, anything about it. But the second time, it concerned a tree, because I had to cut back some of the trees. They just needed to be cut back. And this one tree, the tree people wanted to do something, and I was hesitant to do it. So I went through the whole process of trying to, you know, figure out what am I feeling about it. And normally I'll go, well, cut it and wait for a feeling in my stomach, or don't cut it and wait for it. Nothing happened. And I'm asking my guides, you know, and I'm getting that, well, what do you think thing? And I'm going like, what is this? And so I just like let go of Nancy being in the process of this and just looked at it and said, okay, this is the situation. We did not cut it. You know, but it was a very different way of dealing with 3D. And I, after that, you know, when I see these things, I kind of like, kind of set them aside, but I keep looking at them and pondering, you know, what's this thing about? And I feel like we have, whether we know it or not, that we've made a graduation. We graduated from some kind of a level. And now we're, it's almost like the game has morphed into a little bit more advanced game. And instead of trusting and leaning on all of the etheric and divine guidance that we get, it's like, no, you guys have got to step up and you got to start making these decisions because you have all the information. You don't have to keep checking in with us. Does that sound familiar to any of you?
Oh, you're not kidding. Oh, yes. That's the answer we always used to get when we had just about, you know, full-on physical conscious contact with one of the grey teachers, Auris, that we speak about in the Zeta message. We would often ask him questions and he'd always come back and say, you know the answer, look within. We're not here to spoon feed you.
I kind of like the spoon feeding.
Yeah, I know. Everyone does, but he used to say that's not the way you're going to grow. You know, you've got God within, you've got the God essence within, so you have all the answers within. Occasionally, Helene, my co-author, would really, really nag him and he'd give in. But on a lot of occasions, he made us look within and get our own answers.
I have had a feeling that something... Excuse me. Something is happening, but I don't know what. And I wanted to say, NRA in the chat room says Dolores Cannon also has similar information in her book on Jesus' life.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, so, it's an interesting life that he had.
Now, you being a Zeta, Judy, are you not made aware of things that are going on here on Earth?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have an awareness of what's going on. We're not allowed to intervene, but we have an awareness of what's going on, and it's why we're trying to wake up people down here to let you know what's going on so you can do something about it yourselves.
So how are you waking us up?
Through the ET contact experiences and taking people up onto the ships to have their DNA repaired and enhanced, because the more DNA that's awakened, the more conscious awareness you'll be able to access.
Well, I haven't had my trip yet.
Oh, you might have, to be interested in this. Not everyone is consciously aware that they're being taken.
Well, that sucks.
Can I interject something?
Yeah.
I could not remember the book's name, but now I do. I remember Union. That was one of the books. And another one was called Rabboni, which was another word for rabbi. And both of those books, you know, were out in the 70s, I think. And they were about similar information as Anna, grandmother of Jesus. And again, Lawrence Gardner. Lawrence Gardner had fascinating information about those periods and of time and how rabbis... It was a requirement of a rabbi, and maybe even still is, to be married, and how their sexual activity was very restricted. a man and a woman would get together and they would see if the woman could conceive. That was called hand fasting, which apparently they still do in at least remote areas of Scotland and Ireland. I don't know. It's a traditional way. Anyway, they see the hand fasting back in the time of Jesus, apparently, that culture at that time in the, like, the Essene community. The hand fasting was a time to see if the woman was fertile and if she would have, if she would conceive, then there would be a betrothal and they would become married. And they were only allowed to live together as man and wife for 1 month, at which time they were to conceive. And that was a specific month because the high beings that were coming in had to come in at a certain period of time during the year. In other words, the babies that were born had to be born during a certain month. And that was why, otherwise, the man and the woman lived separately and they went about the duties that they had in the community, the Essene community. And I don't know if that's true or not. It's the first time I ran across that information. And that wasn't brought out in this book. But I thought that was fascinating, going into the culture and what was supposed to be that Essene way of life. So, and of course, the wedding in Cana was supposed to be the wedding of Jesus.
That's and, right. I think they bring that up in the Anna book.
I think
it was too.
Yes, they did.
I was watching
a lot of things are clarified, you know, that have sort of been distorted in the scriptures, but they were very much clarified and made very sensible sounding in many ways in this book.
I was watching something last night, and they had a, where the heck was it? Turin, I think it was. And they were talking about William Henry was over there talking about this mountain above Turin where you had a character that came down in a fiery chariot, you know, sounds very much like a UFO landing, this type of thing.
Yeah.
And they had these glyphs in this on this one rock. I mean, it just thousands of glyphs, apparently, what the guy said. And some of them distinctly look like space, you know, they got like a helmet on and everything, you know. But what was fascinating was there were Celtic symbols in that rock too. And they, what they were doing in the show was showing a connection between the Celtics and the Egyptians. Because the Egyptians, all Egyptian hieroglyphics were also found in this area. So there was probably a lot more going on behind the scenes than what we have ever been told between, you know, the priesthood of the Celtics and the Egyptian priests and all, you know, it must, I bet we've lost, you know, like the vast majority of our history is just not there yet. But do the Zetas have information regarding history? Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. So much has been lost. I mean, it's like a sacred Aboriginal site that we visited here in Australia, down in northern New South Wales, where there's Pleiadian and Egyptian hieroglyphs along the walls of a canyon. Because at that stage, the Aboriginal people who are, you know, one of, if not the oldest human race on Earth, were in touch with off-planet teachers. A lot of the Aboriginal people here look upon the Pleiadians as being their ancestors. And apparently people used to come from Egypt to receive teachings from them. And there's evidence of these hieroglyphs in this canyon. Of course, they're trying to disprove it, but I mean, they are quite amazing. I've been there and touched them, and the energy there is just amazing.
For thousands of years.
Oh, yeah. And as they talk about in the Anna books, the family of Jesus did travel to France and over to Avalon. They were involved in all the goings on over there in England amongst the Celtic people. So, yeah, of course, there's been massive cross sort of, you know, crossings of information and mixtures of information going on, and information being brought across from the Middle East and from India to places like France and England.
Well, you know, many English people swear by the fact that Jesus was there. They really hold true to that heritage that he had built. You know, he had gone with his uncle, who's Joseph of Arimathea, who was the tin trader. And and he supplied the Roman soldiers with the tin to make their weapons. So, you know, he was a very important Jewish man, even though he was a Jew. And, you know, he would take Jesus with him to England when he was young. And supposedly, for many hundreds of years, there was a Wattle and Daub hut that Jesus had made for his worship. And it had been covered by some kind of a shelter, and then it was burned down like in the 800s, or I can't remember the dates, but it was burned down. But the English, many English historians, there are many, many, many people and many books and a great deal of literature that has all kinds of documentation that says that Jesus was there, and they have all kinds of proof of sort of things. So I have no doubt. And I thought, you know, there's a legend that Mary Magdalene and Jesus and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and many of the disciples, some of the disciples and the children and the people from the Essene community that were being persecuted. Joseph of Arimathea gets into trouble. Anyway, they're all put on a ship, and they're put on a ship without a rudder. And the legend is that they disappeared and drowned in, you know, someplace in the Mediterranean. And this book that Judy and I are talking about actually discusses that and talks about it in truth and how they happened to survive, which was obviously intervention. So there might be some truth to that legend. And, you know, the area in France.
Camargue. Sainte-Marie de la Mar.
Yeah, and there's another place that's really, really deeply. And William Henry talks about it all the time. He has
the Isle of Glass in this region.
No, France. In France,
Renaissance. Is that what one you're thinking about?
No, it's I'll think of it. Choose to remember. It'll come to me.
The Pyrenees.
Anyway. Oh yes, Rennes-le-Château. Right. Yes. Yes, Rennes-le-Château. Well, that's another place that there was a whole community of Essenes that settled there and brought relics there that were important. And there's a whole mystery about the Rennes-le-Château. And Hitler, I read another book that was really quite fascinating. I can't remember the guy's name, who was Hitler's, he was a gay man, and he was a very favored person in Hitler's additional personnel, because he was a mystic, and he was also very interested in artifacts, as was Hitler. And he sent Hitler to the Languedoc, that's what it is, the Languedoc area of France. And apparently some of those artifacts that were really important were actually found by this man and taken up. And Hitler had a whole bunch of stuff. Supposedly he ended up with the, what was the name of the sword? The Sword of Destiny.
The Spear of Destiny.
Yeah, the Spear of Destiny.
Spear of Destiny.
Yeah, spear. I'm sorry. My mouse didn't work right. But, you know, the Indiana Jones movie, I mean, I suspect there is some quite a bit of truth in that. Where Raiders of the Lost Ark? You know how Hollywood portrays everything in front of our face so that we say, oh, no, that was just a movie.
I've always thought that there was a lot of truth in that.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it's underneath the Smithsonian somewhere. Apparently,
no,
there was
in Oak Island. It's in Oak Island.
Well, who knows? That could be. And, you know, the Templars, a lot of them did escape the execution on Friday the 14th, a lot of them came to America and
Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and, Judy, what's down there?
She might not know what Oak Island is.
Oh, I didn't think of that.
She's in Australia.
You know? Oh, well, I thought her being an ET, she'd know what's down in Oak Island.
Judy, do you know what Oak Island is?
Oh, look, the name rings a bell, but I don't know.
We gotta get, you know, can we make a request that, you know, they let you tell us more than you tell us, because you know, we brag about we got high people, you know, we know high people, meaning you guys, you're above the planet.
If I could only come on the show in my grey form, I'd remember a lot more. But the trouble is, when I come back down here with the human brain, it's only 10% active, like all human brains are. So I can't remember a lot.
Well, we'd be glad to have your alter self show up.
I'm not allowed to.
You're not allowed to.
I'd love to be able to do that.
Okay, can I make another request? You know, could that law be changed?
Good, then I'll get my memories back.
Hey, listen, maybe you can ask your commander up there if they'd like to come on a radio show.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they have Skype, don't they?
Sort of.
No, seriously.
It's probably seriously no.
Probably seriously. What are those women thinking?
If I was to bring back all the stuff from up there, my head would explode. And that would not be a pretty sight.
Well, you know, the Ark of the Covenant, which is what we're discussing here, because that was what they, in the movie that they found, you know, but the story about it, it's got so many different places that it could be. You know, including,
the Dogon culture
in
Africa?
Yes, yeah. Ethiopia. What is it? Ethiopia.
Ethiopia.
You know, there's some people that think it's in Oak Island, you know, down there. There are rumors of it being here and there, and, you know, it's like, Zetas, you don't know where it is either. And we also think that there must be more than one. We
found there was more than one. Right. Yeah,
they found the Ark of Gabriel, it's called, underneath Mecca when they were doing renovation back a few years ago. And that one, well, when the workers saw it in the tunnel, they were clearing a tunnel. They found tunnels and they were clearing it. And when they found this device, somebody touched it and it discharged and killed somebody. I think there were three of them, and one of them at least died. I don't actually like to remember those things. But when it went off, it caused a plasma burst to come up from the ground and hit a crane. And then the crane collapsed. And they blamed it. It's actually a photograph, and they blame it on it being hit by a lightning bolt. But that killed a bunch of people because of the ensuing stampede that occurred. Because this is right where the, you know, that square kebab building is that is all black and they all walk around it.
Right.
Then the story is that people in charge of Mecca itself and the ones in charge of all this got a hold of the Russians. And the Russians came and got it and took it to Antarctica. And then when they got it to Antarctica, that's when Patriarch Kirill, the head of the Orthodox Church in Russia, went down to Antarctica to bless some church that was like a kind of like an elaborate outhouse down there, you know? So there's some really very fascinating, I mean, they could do unbelievable sequel to that Ark of the Covenant verse story. About where these things are, but you don't know where they are and what's happened. Because, you know, what does happen if they all start turning on? Is it some kind of an ultra energy device?
Yeah, it's some sort of energy device, I'd say.
You know, I'm just picked up a book last night. I'm always pursuing nonfiction, and I thought, you know what? I just need a good story. So I had somewhat followed this author, not because I like his writing style, but because he's extremely informative, and he'd written several books that were removed. They were removed and rewritten, and you can't get the books that he wrote, but they're novels, but these got lots of information in them. And so he's talking about the Maranatha manuscript, which I never heard of. I've heard of Maranatha, like there's a Maranatha church, and we passed it today on the way to the wilds. But so I was asking, supposedly there were three globes that were dug up by the Knights Templars under King Solomon's temple when they went to the Middle East during the Crusades. And two of the globes supposedly have documents. They all three have documents in them. And I don't know why they're special, but anyway, two of them are supposed to be underneath, I don't know if it's the Washington Monument. Apparently, a 33rd degree Mason has to come in with any federal building, and they have to lay the cornerstone. Now, I didn't know this, but I'm not surprised because I think about some of the Masonic symbols that are on the cornerstones of buildings. Okay, so two of these globes supposedly was buried by George Washington when they began doing what they were doing, building in Washington. And the third one was in a monastery in, in Greece. And apparently Hitler found out through a monk who was betraying the monastery, and the monks were all killed, but Hitler got a hold of this third globe, and in it is the Maranatha scripture. And it was supposed to be a letter that Paul the Apostle had written to the Corinthians. And it has to do with when the second coming of Jesus is. And also, there is a formula in it for a weapon, which is naphthalene. I can't remember the other name of it, but it's actually napalm gas. And there was a war that was fought, I can't remember when, but it was ancient, many, many, many hundreds of years ago, where they actually, it was called... the spear of fire or the, I was tired when I was reading it last night, so I can't remember clearly. But anyway, it was some kind of a weapon that they used, and they called it the something of fire, like the spear of fire or the arrow of fire, and it was actually napalm. So this document, I don't know if it's true or not, but I think it's quite interesting. So I was asking some people today on the way to the wilds, you know, does anyone know anything about Maranatha? And I told them this little brief note, and somebody looked it up online as we were driving, and she said, yeah, Maranatha has something to do with the second coming of Jesus, and it was written by the Apostle Paul. So I thought, oh, okay, well, that's on the internet, so who knows what else is part of this story that's true. This guy is quite fascinating with the information that he puts out in his novels, you know, not unlike Graham Hancock and Robert Bivol and many, many others, you know, that write novels to put the truth out there. But does anyone know anything about any of this? Have you ever heard any of it?
No.
I have heard about it. I can see the image that you were, but I think it was actually on TV.
Really?
Yeah, I can't. All I can remember is the image that you all of a sudden I see this television and I see this image in it, and they were talking about some god that had something that sounds like it was a napalm weapon, and it was in some very ancient text. I don't remember anything about them talking about the globe or any of that. So somehow or another, after the war, this text became known.
Yes.
Hmm. Interesting.
I don't know how, I mean, I haven't gotten far enough into the book yet, but I would assume that that's how they got napalm for Vietnam, was from what they got from the scientists, maybe in Project Paperclip or something.
They could have figured that one out on their own.
Well, that very well could be.
But to have, you know, to have a weapon that will throw it out, you know, and spell it safely, that's another thing.
I'm glad you've heard of it because, you know, sometimes it's nice to have a connection, something that validates that, you know, that you've seen something.
That'd have to go back to the controllers, you know, that I talk about in my latest book, you know, anything weaponry like that, you know, it'd be the negative thing down here, the negative forces.
Sure. Right. Oh, you know, the intention of all of that is weaponizing it.
Well, you know, we were talking about clones earlier in the week, and somebody, and Dolly, if you remember more about it than I do, but somebody had posted something concerning a download from some ETs, I'm not sure who, that were saying that they were very distressed over the concept of cloning because they had given the science for the, you know, making new limbs and, you know, helping people out not to be able to create clones. So, Judy, do you know if there's clones on the Earth?
I'm pretty sure there would be because I know some people have the technology to do it. It'd be a good way of trapping a soul. So, you know, it'd be negative stuff.
That's what they were saying. They trapped the soul in it.
Right.
Sam, do you remember who posted that? I'm asking Sam in the chat room.
Yeah, do you have any idea how...
He remembers everything.
Do you have any idea how they were trapping it? How can you trap a soul?
Yeah, I know.
They have the technology.
Yeah. It really takes away people's power to you know... You can't really trap a soul, but people can be convinced that they are trapped. Let's put it that way.
Hmm.
That makes more sense to me than trapping a soul.
Yeah.
You let the clone think that that this is an okay situation. Well, okay, you take the human being, okay, and you say to them, we're going to clone you. That means we're going to change your body out, but everything about you is going to be maintained, you know, because you're soul will be trapped within this new body because you're just a god that is in a human bod. So, you know, it's the idea that you would convince them that this was okay. Because I can't imagine that it is, that you can do it.
Yeah. Because so a lot of people, do you remember that rail movement that used to be around a few years ago? I haven't heard much of them lately, but they were experimenting with it. And they were totally caught up in physical form. They couldn't seem to understand the concept that we're more than a physical form. And so they were bringing in cloning, promising people that, oh, you can live forever, you know, by keeping cloning yourself. But, you know, it's a complete misconception because the physical aspect is such a tiny, tiny aspect of the whole thing. So why would you want to keep coming back physically?
I wouldn't.
Don't know. They don't understand.
But the clones don't know. The clones think they're real. Would that be true?
Yeah.
You know, so they walk around and they think that they are actually real because they've been... It's like... You know, the game planning that they do. You know, they set these things up so that you really sort of like merge yourself in with this entity in the digital form. But they convince these people that, no, your soul is there. You're absolutely... Because how many people can reach out and say, oh, I know, I can feel my soul. Here, yeah, I can describe my soul. I have conversations with my... How many people can do that? So it'd be really easy to tell them that their soul was trapped in a clone. I just can't buy that.
No.
As mind warfare, yes. But as a physical scientific fact, I just don't think so.
Well, you know, I was just listening to someone talk about clones because they were answering questions for people. And they said, yeah, clones have souls. If they don't have souls, they will quickly disintegrate. Not disintegrate.
It takes 6 years. Walt Silva was talking about it. It takes 6 years for your body to completely regenerate. And in a clone's environment, because you don't have the soul, it cannot regenerate the cells, so no clone would last longer than the 6 year cycle of a human body.
Okay, I didn't know it was 6 years, but yeah.
I'm just telling you what Walt told me.
Okay.
So it's just
interesting. Well, not being one of the scientists that do it, I don't know for sure, but that's my understanding, that they have a soul, and I don't know where they get the souls, whether they can split the soul. I know, well, I believe, I mean, I think about the shamanism, you know, pieces of the soul leave every time there's a trauma. You know, oh God, I don't want to be here, I'm leaving. And, you know, shaman's work is to bring the soul fragments back so that this person has better health, is able to, I'm going to put it in my own words, but they are able to create their own more positive reality. Because when these soul fragments are missing, they can become ill, or they have what a shaman might call bad luck. And if you have a real bad streak of bad luck a lot, then, you know, you've got soul fragments that need to be recalled. So I don't know if they can split the soul and put them in these clones. I don't know. But my understanding is from multiple sources of the things that I research is that they have the ability to take the soul from a person. That's one of the things about AI, apparently. People have a terrible fear of death, and with AI there is no fear of death because they are not going to end. They can go on forever with their soul inhabiting this replaceable physical 3D form.
But see, the problem is you know, semantics comes into it. It's so confusing. People get so caught up in the physical thing. We are a soul that happens to be incarnating in a physical body for the span of a lifetime. So no one can take your soul. You are a soul. It's like if you compare it to a driver of a car, the body's the vehicle or the car, and we're the driver, or we're the soul coming into the body. Now, parts of the energy can be taken out. So it's not actually split soul, it's split energy. It's just, I know what I'm talking about in grey form, but to put it into verbal human form, I have terrible trouble trying to do this. It's so complex. You know, we are energy beings. We're not physical beings. That's the bottom line. Now, you can create a body, a clone or you know, a normally created body. It's still just a vehicle, and a soul can either come in and inhabit it or not.
So then if they don't, the soul doesn't go in and inhabit it,
the
what
body,
happens
the body
to
will
the
just
body?
The body will disintegrate. But if there's a soul in it, that will keep the body alive. It's just the same as a driver keeping the engine of the car going. But if the driver steps out, the car will eventually run out of petrol and stop running. So a human body or vehicle is exactly the same. When the soul leaves it at death, it runs out of petrol.
Is there a difference between soul and spirit? And can
yes,
one
there is.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, spirit is the astral form. It's of a lower vibration than soul, which is the God. Our soul is our God essence, our higher self, whereas spirit is above physical form in vibrational frequency, but it's not quite as high as a soul, but it is part of the soul.
So maybe that's what they take and put into the clone?
Well, you know, there'd be different ways of doing it. I mean, the Greys have done technology with clones. So one group of Greys had to do it at one point when they lost their ability to reproduce, and some of the people wanted to have physical experiences, and so they created forms by cloning until they could get their ability to reproduce back again. So there's positive and negative sides to it. You know, it's like all things. It has a positive side and a negative side.
When Stan died, I watched. I thought it was my whole soul, but from what y'all are saying, maybe it was a part of my soul leave my body through my chest area. And it stopped in front of my face, kind of to say, okay, goodbye. And it went up and out this humongous window that was there. And I watched it go up in the sky until it disappeared, and I didn't get it back for many, 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 many years until finally something hit me and I decided, hey, I want to live completely here. And I asked it to come back, and it did.
Yeah, that makes sense, because there would have been an energetic attachment between yourself and the person who passed over. So when they passed over, part of your energy would have gone with them and then eventually came back when you were ready.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like whatever it – I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It sounds
my body
like,
went on.
Well, yes, it would have just been part of your energy, because we're all oneness. Energy is all oneness. So when someone passes over, transits through the portal of death, if we have a very close connection, energy connection with that person, then potentially part of our energy that is closely linked to them can go with them until we're ready to get it back again.
Wow.
The key to the whole thing is to remember that everything is energy. That's the bottom line. Energy vibrating at infinite frequencies. We're energy. We're energy beings. We're not a physical form. I know it's very confusing when they talk about man's made in the image of God. It's not a physical image. God's not a physical being. God is a very high frequency energy form. As we are, we in our true form, we are multidimensional beings vibrating on a number of different frequencies of energy. So, yeah, we are in that form. We are made in the image of God as energy.
Energy, yeah, the energy part. People don't understand that.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Oh, it's fascinating. Fascinating. Hard to put into verbal language because it's so multidimensional.
Yeah. The English language is, it just always fails me.
Yeah, very limiting, very limiting.
You must be from a culture that has many spiritual definitions, and our language just doesn't cover that.
That's the problem. That's the problem.
Yeah.
I know, as a grey down here, I do have trouble verbalizing physically and on a consciousness level, I have trouble verbalizing things because the information that I have can't be put into physical words.
Yeah, I understand that.
Well, that's today, but tomorrow we'll have the capacity to see. You don't get the language until you get the concept, and until people begin to get the concepts, then the words begin to come out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so they're there. It's just, it's remembering.
Yeah.
Giving ourselves
permission.
But see,
the thing is, we don't communicate verbally amongst ourselves. We communicate telepathically, and far more can be put across telepathically than can be put across verbally.
Yes. Oh, I think so. I think we're communicating all the time on multiple levels.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you guys know you're doing that. You know, us guys down here, if somebody's doing it and they say they're doing it, they're considered weird and maybe crazy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, listen, we're at the end of the show here. Let's see. Let's start with Barbara. Barbara, want to pass a thought on?
Oh, I wish I had something wonderful to share, but just thank you for everybody who's being here. Dolly, Nancy, and Judy, thank you. And anyone who's listening in, I thank you, and I send you blessings.
Judy.
Mm-hmm.
You got a passing word?
Not particularly. Not particularly today. I just really enjoyed the show, and it's lovely to have Barbie back. So welcome back, Barb.
Oh, thank you.
Lovely to miss you. We
and
missed
I'm
you badly.
In charge. Oh boy.
No. I am going to say that. You know, I understand you don't want to go on to this Egypt trip, but just think of it as an assignment from the Say What show to go to Egypt and come back and just tell us about it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
you're on
a good
assignment.
Because we don't get to go. Yeah.
All right. You'll see me kicking and screaming, but, you know, I'll go. Okay, you guys.
You're on assignment. you're our envoy to Egypt.
All right,
and it will be full of magic, and the Zetas will be up there just, you know, recording it, so someday when everybody knows that they are, they can say, and look at what Barbara did in Egypt, and it'll be on Ancient Aliens. It'll be fun.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Dolly.
Yes, I just want to say thanks, everybody. Thanks to the listeners for listening. And we love your comments. When it goes to YouTube, we love the comments. We love interacting with the chat room peoples, of course, too. And they interact with us. So that's all I got besides love you guys. And bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Say what? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.